You've tuned in to Tabletop Meta, a podcast where we talk about the meta of tabletop gaming.
Why we game, how we game, what games we play, and what all that says about us as gamers and people.
I'm glad you could join us today. I'm Will.
And I'm Becky. Welcome to Tabletop Meta.
And today we're going to talk about, I think it's kind of a subject I find kind of as an interesting discussion. Can old games compete with new games? I mean, I tend to be very much in the, I'm always looking for that new game that, you know, the new hotness or the new miniatures or the new stuff on that.
Would that be the cult of the new, Will?
Yes, yeah, that would be cult of the new, of course. But it's surprising in our gaming group when we bring back games, how enjoyable they are. For example, let's say Dominion.
Yeah, you know, that's very interesting. I think before we get into Dominion, though, I think we should talk a little bit about what we consider, what we're talking about when we talk about old games. I think old games kind of mean two different things, because people who are new to the hobby, you have an old game that's new because it's new to them.
Well, that could be something even as, you know, 2 to 5 years old, if you haven't played it, but that could be for other gamers considered an old game. Whereas us, you're talking maybe games that are 20 years old.
Right.
You know, thinking of Betrayal on House of the Hill, Talisman, Flux.
Robo Rally.
Robo Rally. And those games are 20 years old, which I think is absolutely amazing.
Well, see, I remember back in our role-playing game, somebody had a Talisman, or they talked about Talisman.
We played Talisman. We even came up with our own ideas on that.
Right, and that is a very old game. But if you've never played Talisman, it could be new to you. But I think Talisman has some of the old elements in it, more dice rolling. They don't have. But I still think Talisman is a fun game to play.
Well, I think it also gets on the what the game is. I mean, who put together and why? Because I'm thinking of like B-17. B-17 was an old game put out by Avalon Hill that simulates running a bomber crew during World War II. And I love the game. Absolutely adore the game.
I don't think I've ever played that.
It's a solo game.
Oh, well, that's why.
But the thing is, I hadn't played it in a while, and I cracked it open, and it is an absolute ton of dice rolling, so there's very little choices for you to make in the game. It's a lot of you're rolling to see what happens and sort of almost choose your own adventure. It's still fun, but it's interesting how you don't think of that when you are thinking about it and then coming back to it.
Right. And I think that's where Dominion for us, I mean, Dominion was one of the very first deck building games out there.
Yeah.
And it's been around for
at least 10 years.
Right. And when we went back, I hadn't played it in years. And I love Thunderstone is kind of my thing. I like a lot of different concepts about it and that. And I went back to Dominion. And the thing about Dominion that I found really refreshing and quite fun to play was the fact that you draw 5 cards and you use those 5 cards and you get rid of them and you drive 5 more. There's no getting more cards into your hand. There's no building up and having cool combinations. I mean, if you're lucky, you can maybe do that. And I try to, because that's kind of my groove with these things. But I liked Dominion with the draw 5, use 5, and draw 5 new ones. And that made it really very interesting to me, and in a way that it kind of played it with fresh eyes. And I guess I kind of compared it to Ascension,
just so you know, came out in 2009. I looked it up.
Oh, excellent. Thank you. So that is now, 8 years old?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can add or subtract or something. Yeah, so that's quite old.
But see, now I find that interesting is with all the games we play in our game group, getting Dominion, that's an 8-year-old game, you know, it it kind of feels like an old game. It's kind of interesting, that feeling.
It brings people back to the table. We had one person that really made an effort. And let me tell you, she is the mother of three small children. That's an effort to come to the gaming group.
But that is one of her absolute favorite games. Right. And if she knows it's going to be there, she'll try to jump in. It's one thing she likes, but that's, I think, a lot of games, there's that people that really like the game.
Well, I know, like, if we'd play Thunderstone, there would be other people who would be there to play Thunderstone. Correct. Just because they went. As I was saying, Ascension. I play that only as an app, because what I really like about Ascension is how you can get all of the cards and combinations, and you can build up, and you can have so much going on that it would be almost impossible to take care of in a live game.
Yeah.
But in an app, it works fine. And I suppose I got so used to that when I went back to Dominion was just surprisingly good again. And I really liked that.
Yeah, I think that's something. There's times when you get clouded by either playing a game so many times that you get tired of it, or you had a bad experience because you played it at a con and someone maybe didn't teach it very well, and everyone's going, this game is so great, oh, this is wonderful, and you're going, I don't see the interest.
Yep.
Why play it? You know, but then when you could look back at it with a new pair of eyes, it's always very interesting.
Yeah, it was. We have quite a few old games that we bring back into our rotation.
I think the other thing is it's very comforting. It's that bringing back something, oh, I know how to play this, where I'm familiar with it. I don't have to stress about learning.
Okay, and I have to say that's probably something that our game group has, since our game group plays so many new games. And we just do, and so many different games. It's nice to bring out an old game like Settlers or the train game across America.
Ticket to Ride.
Oh, gosh, why can't I think of that? Ticket to Ride. Because when we play that with people who know how to play it, it's just fun to walk in, put down the game, and have everybody play. And right. Have everybody know the rules without wondering if, are you sure that's right? Or
what version do we have?
Yes. So it's really fun to play a game that everybody knows. And I assume in gaming groups where they play the same games a lot, they don't have that same experience going back to old games to do that, because they tend to play the same games over and over.
I think it depends. It depends on the players, though, too.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I always get the feeling that our game group is a little different than other ones, but I don't know if that's just anecdotal or if it's really true. And it doesn't matter.
We'll have to go to other game groups and find out.
Yeah, we can crash some.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's interesting because there are also a lot of games out there that are refining systems and refining how gameplay mechanics and using them in a new way. You know, staying with Dominion, that kind of deck building, you get something like Paperback, which is a beautiful use of the deck building system. He doesn't hide from that he borrowed from Dominion. This is the deck building, but it's using that system using with cards to get your letters, then to spell your words.
And you have to make words. I find, I love Paperback. I find it challenging because I am a horrible speller, and I find it harder yet because I tend to transpose letters way too much, so when I get things. But I still find it fun because if you can come up with the words to spell, you can do these things. I played that with the 4-H Ambassadors. That's a high school age group, and they really enjoyed it, even though not all of them were good. The poor spellers always have a harder time with it, but
I find it interesting, especially when you get it's interesting to see how they react. A game that I love, Formula D, and then seeing the kids react to a game that they've never seen, and the joy of when it all clicks together, too.
You know, I suppose in some ways we could say these, the old games that we're talking about are kind of seen as gateway games.
Yeah.
And I can see that because gateway games are basically games that you can grasp without having a foundation of game mechanics. I mean, once you have a kind of a foundation of game mechanics, you can start stepping up into other games. You know, it's worker placement. Once you understand the foundation of worker placement, say from Agricola, then you can move up to Puerto Rico, which is slightly up above. But then you can move into games that are more complex because they have both worker placement and deck building. Or a game like Few Acres of Snow that works on several different levels.
Yeah, it's interesting, though.
You know, but of those course, are...
I don't know. I think I'd have to argue with you on which would be more complex or a step up, Puerto Rico or Agricola.
I think... Oh, okay, it's probably a personal thing, then.
Yes.
Because Puerto Rico, when I play it, it's too much like playing blackjack on a table full of people who know how to play it. If you don't do it right, they get mad at you.
Oh, I
because
love
you've,
that,
you've
though.
Messed up their play.
Yeah, but I guess I have to say that I'm one who kind of, when I play Puerto Rico, I understand the game mechanics and how the system is working to go, okay, you're going to do that, and you should be doing that, so yeah. But I don't get upset if someone goes, well, I'm just going to throw that in. I don't mind.
Yeah, I suppose. I suppose if we wanted to go down, we'd have to go with Once Upon a Fable, which is a fairly forgiving worker placement game.
But that
I like to teach to kids.
No, but that's interesting because it is incredibly close to Agricola with being a little more forgiving.
Right.
On there. But I think it also definitely gets into, I think a lot of things where it's talking about your comfort level. What do you feel like playing today? And I hate to say it, but the economics of, do I have shelf space for it on that?
You know, that's true. When you have an older game, you often hear people talk about reviews and they say, well, it's been replaced by.
Or killed by. If you go into Board Game Geek, there are lists like that, which are always fun to read.
Now, you talk about that, and I'm going to say the dreaded M word, Monopoly. But, you know, they always said, like,
how you said that. That was good.
Acquire took over. It should take the place of any time you'd want to play Monopoly.
Right.
And I found it interesting because the first time we played Acquire, I ended up in a position where I felt like I was playing Monopoly. It was faster, but I ended up not being able. I knew I wasn't going to win. I had bought the wrong thing at the wrong time. It was the first time I played it. We were playing with my friend Jenny, who is really, really good at any kind of game, and she was just killing me, and I was just along for the ride at the end. However, the next time we played it, I was better, and I was able to stay in it better.
Well, and also when the first time you're playing it, it got into that frustration level.
Yes.
Of, well, but the thing is, it was interesting because you could see it. It was simple enough to realize, uh-oh, I'm out.
And part of it was my own fault I was in that position, unlike Monopoly when it's not, because it's dice rolling and all that. Plus, Acquire ended much quicker. So I can understand that.
I always appreciate that.
I still like Acquire. Now that I've played it a couple times after that, and I always have to play games at least twice, if not three times, before I really know most games, if I really like it or not. But I still really like Acquire. That's an older game
that's at least 20
really
years old.
Fun to go back to.
Yeah, I find it interesting.
But I think it has just enough economic elements in it to not overwhelm me, because I'm really not fond of some... I don't think I'd like a purely economic.
Well, I find it interesting because
I don't know.
We're kind of riding that edge of simplicity to complexness. I mean, it's interesting.
Yes.
There's just times I almost it sounds like we can get that if it has that level of simplicity, Not meaning it's dumb or, but that the rule set is much more condensed or
easy to understand.
Easier to understand, which is kind of interesting on that.
Okay, now a game I have never played, Tigris and Euphrates.
Yes.
That's an older game.
Yes.
Would that be a very complex game or would that be a very simple game? We don't own Tigris and Euphrates. I believe that's an app that you have. Yeah. I've never tried it.
I find it a bit on the complex level in the way that it's understanding how things interact with each other. It's interesting because I think I've heard people who reviewed it or talked about it has that kind of chess feel. Okay. Thinking of another game that we played that was very much like a chess feel was like, say, Cairo.
Cairo,
that was the one where you're moving the market and you're moving the, you put down your market and then people come to your market and
yes,
stuff on that.
Yes, very much.
Not to compare Cairo with Tigris and Euphrates.
No, it just, you understand.
Just the kind of feeling on that.
I just brought that up because in our discussion, it was beginning to seem like we were saying that older games are simpler games. And
yeah.
I don't believe that Tigris and Euphrates could be considered a simple game.
No, and I think especially if you go back to, let's say, Avalon Hill games, some of the Tactics 2 and Advanced Squad Leader, I guess, on that. Some of that, those two things would be, I think, very complex on there.
Right. You know, and I don't know, I just find interesting the cult of the new, which I fall for. I mean, I admit, because I like bright, shiny new things.
Can you say Rising Sun?
I can say Rising Sun, and I actually really wanted to have you back that game. In just for the audience, is that Will is the expert at Kickstarter. He can go out and he has had tremendous luck buying Kickstarter games. And
I have to hold myself back. Trust me, I know I could if I had unlimited funds, I would be
supporting everyone.
Well, I would be supporting everyone, but definitely there'd be ones I would look through, because when I look at Kickstarter, I'm judging several different things on that. One is how it's going to interact with our group. And do I have a game that maybe doesn't fit that kind of category and stuff?
I sense an entire podcast on kickstarting.
Oh, yeah. We could do that. That'd be
coming
good.
Up, but I was not actually interested in the first game that came out,
Blood Rage.
There was a lot of things about it that just were not the way it was, and we're not getting in because the podcast would take too long on my preconceptions of things. But I actually watched Blood Rage being played, and you played it, and you described it, and it sounded really good. So when Rising Sun came out, it was actually in a theme that I thought was really good, so we thought
we could support it. Ancient Japan.
Right. And so that's good. But I don't know if the new games would ever... All the new games we have, I don't think I've had any that I said, oh, well, I'll play this one rather than playing a one that we had already.
That's interesting. Yeah, because I don't know if I...
That I really liked. Maybe I should put it that way.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to really kind of... I guess part of my thought is when I get the game, okay, good, let's play it on there, but it goes into the game library, and now it becomes part of the collective of games that I have. And I go, okay, we're going to be doing a gaming event. What should we play this week? And so I'm going down there and looking at all of my games and going, what are we going to be doing? Interesting kind of stuff.
How many people do we have? And sometimes just the older games, because they're just well known by us, that we can go in and we can sit down and play them. And if you've played an older game and you really enjoyed it, I don't see how a newer game, unless it had a better theme or a better thing that you liked it better. Boy, that whole thought just ran off on me. I don't know where I'm going.
I can see what you're talking about is we need to look at what the game offers you. What does it offer your group? I mean, and so I'm not going to begrudge something or someone if they have this passion for an older game or a game that they haven't heard, and I'm going to teach it to them. I'm going to, you know,
right.
That kind of Randolph too. So
yeah, I know.
It's kind of interesting because we're trying to get this interwoven on here.
I think that the cult of the new, I think that old games can definitely compete with the new ones.
No, I agree.
Especially if you are honest about why you're playing things. And you have a group that you can go in and you can play that game. And Ticket to Ride is Dominion is a good example where you go and you play and you just have fun because you all know it and you all enjoy that game.
Bonanza.
Oh, yeah, Bonanza. Boy, we've played that game for years and it's always a winner when it hits the table.
Which we have to bring back sometime. We haven't played it in at least 3 months.
Oh, terrible.
So.
Yeah, well, we've been kind of obsessed with other games. I would say that old games can definitely compete with new games. But I think you have to know what you're looking for. And it's why we have as many games as we do. Not only do we have a gaming group, but each game kind of brings a different thing.
That's a very good point.
And you play them for different reasons.
So, yeah, let us know what you, kind of the reasons you play old games versus new, or new games versus old. That would be kind of...
Or for that matter, why you would learn a game that's 20 years old that you've never played before? Because that happens to us a lot. We'll hear somebody talk and they'll say, oh, well, that's an old game. And we're going, never heard of that game. And then we might find it someplace. And would you learn an old game? Or would you just say, oh, that's 20 years old. Forget about it. I'll try something new.
And now it's time for the game review.
It's where we talk about a game we really like or have recently played.
The tabletop meta rating system has 4 levels. At the top of the list is...
Buy it! I have to have this in my game library.
One step down is...
Oh man, I like this game. I will play it anytime.
Just below that is...
I'll play it if somebody else wants to. Or if I really want to be at the table.
And the bottom rating is...
Ugh, not my kind of game. I think I'll pass today.
Today we're going to, for our game review, we're going to talk about a game from Space Cowboys called Elysium. Elysium is, you're bringing the Greek gods and you're telling stories with the Greek gods.
Yep. And you got the different families of gods that
you have
are
the different gods. There's in the box, you have 8 different gods and you're going to take 5 of those to play each game. So you can do different varieties in there.
And each god kind of has its own niche in what it lets you do, its own theme.
For example, if you play with Zeus, he's playing with a lot of power. If you play with Poseidon, it's a lot of brutal interaction between players. If you play with Athena, it's much more cooperative play.
But when you get something, your opponents get something.
Right. So, and if you play with like Ares, it's all about war and conquest. So you decide on the set you're going to be playing with. You're going to deal those cards. In each round, there is 3 cards per each player playing plus 1. And you're going to be playing over 5 rounds. And each turn, you're going to be acquiring 3 cards. And your turn order for the next round.
Right.
And it has a very beautiful, and then what you're doing, I'll get into a little bit of the other play system. You're then going to acquire the cards, and when they are in your domain, which is the above part of your play field, you can use the powers on the cards to affect the gameplay. But then you're going to be moving them down to your Elysium, which is their legends and stories, as a set collection.
Right, because when they're above in your domain, you can use their powers, but they don't score any points for you at the end of the game. Anything that's above in your domain at the end of the game gives you no points. Everything down in the Elysium, where you create your stories, scores you points
but
except
you don't.
You can no longer use the powers. So there's a real fine line in the balance of when you're going to move them down from being useful in the game to scoring you points that
will win.
And that's
the great balance in the game. Now, how you purchase the cards is you have on your board, you have four colored columns. You have a red, yellow, blue, and green. And each card will have one or two colors that you use to purchase it with. All you have to have is that color column available to use. When you purchase the card, you're going to turn over one column, not always the one that you've used the color to buy. So if I buy a card that requires a blue column, I have to have that column available to use. But then I could turn over the red one, depending if I want to use the blue for later on. But then you're also, along with the three cards, you're going to determine your turn order for the next round, which will also determine on how much gold you get and how many cards you'll be able to transfer from your domain to your Elysium, scoring points at the end of the game.
And in order to determine your turn order, you need to have specific colors
that's like
in,
purchasing
in columns
card.
Available. So you really have to balance everything. And it gets a little tricky because, you know, you might want to buy no cards that have green on them, but you want to buy the green space. But if you use your card, it's just very tricky and it takes a little bit to get used to. But the economy of your choices and the fact that you only have four things to spend each round and get what you want is really interesting.
And it's finding how those cards, how you can interact with those cards to find combinations that one will give you victory points or give you gold that will allow you to transfer other people. And it's that whole beautiful combination. There definitely can be a little bit of, if someone hasn't played it, they get a little bit of that analysis paralysis where they'll go, I really want that one, but I don't know how it's going to work, or I want that one. But I find the game beautiful in how it flows on just everything about the game, how it's very tight. It's a very beautiful game.
It's also an extremely elegant game. And I just, the economy of everything that you're doing, you don't get a, you each have your own playing field, but you don't get a board. You just get this strip of cardboard that is above and below, but it has on that strip of cardboard everything, a space you need for everything you need to do, so that it's all right there. And it's all so thematic.
And you know, one thing I thought was a very nice touch is for each card set of a specific god, they had one artist do that entire run on there. So there's like, I don't know, 10 cards, something like that. I think it's around 15. And so you have all these cards for one set that's all done by the same artist. So the artwork has this nice, beautiful flow to it, too.
You know, we played this game for the first time at a con we went to. I think it was Fire and Ice over in Oshkosh, but I can't say for sure.
Yeah.
But we were playing it, and we were just drawn in by the looks of it, and we're getting through. And at some point, if you can't take any of the cards on the field because you can't afford them, you lost all of your colors that you can do, you get a citizen card. And the clever, unique thing about this game is the citizen card is just the back of the cards that you're playing with. It looked like artwork.
Yeah,
and suddenly they pulled it off and set it down.
And you the thing is you play this game and you're just playing the game, and then when you have to take a citizen, you realize you've been looking at them because they're the back of the card and they're in your domain. Which the thing is you can then transfer them to complete your sets in your legends.
Because they're kind of like a wild card.
Or they're also, think of this as like the humans written into the god's stories.
Right. And of course, the problem with taking a citizen card is that it's the back, you know, it's the back of the card. On the other side could be some god or god's power that you desperately wanted for
but
your
but you're
hand,
never going to see it.
That you're never going to get because somebody stuck it in because they're a citizen in their hands. And that's just another thing that you have. Now, did you No, I was listening. But did you say about when you score with the sets, the legends, and the families?
There are two different ways of scoring. One is a level set, which is all the cards come in, which we didn't mention, come in a power level 1, 2, or 3. So one way of scoring is collecting the ones from the different gods. So the most you could score with one set would be 5 different gods. So you get a 1, 1, 1, 1 for all the different gods that are in the set. Or you can take the gods, the specific gods, and collect the 1, 2, and 3. But when you place them down in your Elysium to score, you have to declare what set they're going to be part of. And so you have to plan from, you know, the second round on. You're going, okay, well, I need to put this in now because I do have to get started on my scoring. But then you go, I have to maybe guess and say, well, okay, I'm going to make, I think I can make this part of my level set.
Right.
Or I can, no, I think I can make this part of my family set. But also there are cards, they score better either in levels or in families. So you kind of maybe get, okay, well, right. I know I want that there.
Some cards give you the thing. It says it scores you an extra point for every god like this that belongs to this, every card that belongs to this god
or
that's
different
in
god.
That set. So that would be in a family set because all three of them would score. But if it was for a different one, you'd want to put it in a level set because then you would get 4 points or 5
but
points.
But the thing is, you might get near the end of the game and go, ooh, I really want to go hit my level set and say, I don't want to do this, the family. Well, I need this card for that, the other set.
Well,
and that's your quandary of scoring.
And your level set kind of goes up exponentially on how many points it scores. If you have 3 cards in it versus 5 cards in it, you get more points for it if it's got 5
points. So you can
kind
of figure out, well, if you go, okay, well, if I put it this way, I'm going to get 4 points, but if I put it this way, I'm giving 6.
The beauty of this game is that it looks so simple. You have 4 columns, you have these 2 cardboard things that get together, and you have your cards. But it gets so complex. Everything is so interacted. It's not really complex, but there are a lot of moving parts.
Interaction
in this game that you can go for. And it's very deceptive. When you first look at it, you go, that can't be anything. And then you start looking at it, and there are levels to it and layers to it that are just really fun to play, even though, like, I am terrible at this game. I cannot tell you why. There's something about it that I just can't quite manage. I mean, I understand it. I just can't get there. But I still enjoy playing it.
Oh, and I love this game. I am very good at this game. He's awesome at it. I've enjoyed this game. It's one of my favorites.
It's the game we should always pull out when I've been winning too many in a row because I tend to be rather lucky for most games.
That.
So then we can pull this one out and then we'll
stop me. This is really interesting, though, too, is because it has that kind of Greek-Roman theme, they incorporated the design in the box insert. You open it up and it looks like actually Greek Colosseum stand on there. And it looks gorgeous when you open the box and you go, this is so cool.
Yeah, for some reason we tend to really like a lot of Greek themed
They're
games.
Fun.
Yeah, they are. I'm not sure what it is, but this is definitely a game I enjoy, even though I'm not good at.
So thinking for our rating system, what is your rating on it?
Definitely a buy it. I think we decided to buy it while we were still demoing it.
Yes, that would be me. It's without a doubt, this is a buy it for me. Get out and enjoy the game. Find it and play it out and let us know what you think.
Yep. Let us know what you think of Elysium or if you think there's any other good Greek god games out there.
I think that's a very good thought.
So, and you know how to contact us. It's all at the end in our podcast notes.
So we will see you around and keep on gaming. You've been listening to Tabletop Meta.
Because there's more to gaming than playing the game.
See you next time.
Tabletop Meta is produced and edited by Will and Becky Clooney as a part of Burlap and Daisies. For more information on Tabletop Meta, visit our website at tabletopmeta.com. There you can find show notes for each of our episodes, as well as blog posts and more. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter as Tabletop Meta, and on Instagram as tabletop_meta. finally, check out our guild on BoardGameGeek. Thanks for being a part of Tabletop Meta, because there's always more to gaming than playing the game.